Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. So, reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 9th canto, 10th chapter, we're going to do text 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. We're going to do all the way up to, see, where's the one with the purport? Sorry, yeah, we're just going to do up to 8. And 8 is the one we'll chant together. I'll just read the English to 4, 5, 6, and 7, and then we'll chant 8 together. Okay, so this is text 4. To keep the promise of his father intact, Lord Ramachandra immediately gave up the position of king and, accompanied by his wife, Mother Sita, wandered from one forest to another on his lotus feet, which was so delicate that they were unable to bear even the touch of Sita's palms. The Lord was also accompanied by Hanuman, king of the monkeys, or by another monkey, Sugriva, and by his own younger brother, Lord Lakshman, both of whom gave him relief from the fatigue of wandering in the forest. Having cut off the nose and ears of Suparnika, thus disfiguring her, the Lord was separated from Mother Sita. He therefore became angry, moving his eyebrows and thus frightening the ocean, who then allowed the Lord to construct a bridge to cross the ocean. Subsequently, the Lord entered the kingdom of Ravana to kill him, like a fire devouring a forest. May that Supreme Lord, Ramachandra, give us all protection. So that's kind of like a prayer, basically, that's being offered here. So, I mean, it's only giving the story in a very kind of like a skeletal form. A lot of details are being left out, but anyway. So text 5. In the arena of sacrifice performed by Viswamitra, Lord Ramachandra, the king of Ayodhya, killed many demons, rakshasas, and uncivilized men who wandered at night in the mode of darkness. May Lord Ramachandra, who killed these demons in the presence of Lakshman, be kind enough to give us protection. O king, the pastimes of Lord Ramachandra were wonderful, like those of a baby elephant. In the assembly where Mother Sita was to choose her husband in the midst of the heroes of this world, he broke the bow belonging to Lord Shiva. This bow was so heavy that it was carried by 300 men. But Lord Ramachandra bent and strung it and broke it in the middle, just as a baby elephant breaks a stick of sugar cane. Thus the Lord achieved the hand of Mother Sita, who is equally as endowed with transcendental qualities of form, beauty, behavior, age, and nature. Indeed, she was the goddess of fortune who constantly rests on the chest of the Lord. While returning from Mother Sita's home after gaining her at the assembly of competitors, Lord Ramachandra met Parashuram. Although Parashuram was very proud, having rid the earth of the royal order 21 times, he was defeated by the Lord, who appeared to be a Kshatriya of the royal order. And we'll chant this text 8 together. Ya satya passa parivitta pito nidesham. Ya satya passa parivitta pitur nidesham. Strenasya chapi sirasa jagare sabharya. Strenasya chapi sirasa jagrihe sabharya. Strenasya Rajam Shriyam Pranayina Surido Nivasam. Rajam Shriyam Pranayina Surido Nivasam. Tyaktva Yayo Vanamasun Iva Mukta Sangha. Tyaktva Yayo Vanamasun Iva Mukta Sangha. Yasacha Pasa Parivita Pitur Nidesham. Strainasya Chappi Sirasa Jagrihe Sabarya. Rajam Shriyam Pranayina Surido Nivasam. Tyaktva Yayo Vanamasun Iva Mukta Sangha. Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita. Vaishnavis. Can you take these? Ya, Lord Ramachandra, who? Satya Pasa Parivita Pitu. Of his father, who was bound by the promise to his wife. Nidesam, the order. Strenasya, of the father, who is very much attached to his wife. Cha, also. Api, indeed. Sirasa, on his head. Jagre, accepted. Sabarya, with his wife. Rajyam, the kingdom. Shriyam, opulence. Pranayina, relatives. Surida, friends. Nivasam, residents. Tyaktva, giving up. Yayo, went. Banam, to the forest. Asun, life. Iva, like. Muktasanga, a liberated soul. Purport, translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Carrying out the order of his father, who was bound by a promise to his wife, Lord Ramachandra left behind his kingdom, opulence, friends, well-wishers, residence, and everything else, just as a liberated soul gives up his life, and went to the forest with Sita. Purport. Maharaj Dasaras had three wives. One of them, Kaikeyi, served him very pleasingly. He therefore wanted to give her a benediction. Kaikeyi, however, said that she would ask for the benediction when it was necessary. At the time of the coronation of Prince Ramachandra, Kaikeyi requested her husband to enthrone her son, Bharat, and send Ramachandra to the forest. Maharaj Dasarath, being bound by his promise, ordered Ramachandra to go to the forest, according to the dictation of his beloved. And the Lord, as an obedient son, accepted the order immediately. He left everything without hesitation, just as a liberated soul or great yogi gives up his life without material attraction. Om Meghanatha Mananda Shajananjana Shalakaya Chakshuna Militam Yena Tasma Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupakara Mayam Dharati Swaparantikam. So, Maharaj Dasarath had, as mentioned here, three wives. The senior wife, the first wife, was Kaushalya, and then Sumitra, and then the youngest wife was Kaikeyi. And on one occasion, Kaikeyi did some very pleasing service to Maharaj Dasarath, and as a result, he offered her these two boons. A little background information there. Kaikeyi was the daughter of Maharaj Ashvapati, and he was the ruler of a kingdom. I got two different things. One reference, one source said Pakistan, that area, and the other source said as far as west as Ukraine. But in any event, he was the ruler of that kingdom. And he was an ally of the Kosala state, which was the state that Maharaj Dasarath was, you know, the king or emperor for. So on one occasion, Maharaj Dasarath was touring, and he visited. Well, actually, just a little bit more background information. Ashvapata had, for something he did, he was offered a benediction or a boon that he could understand the language of birds. But it came with a caveat, so to speak, which was that if he told anybody else what those birds were saying, he would immediately die. So he was, at one time, he was going someplace with his wife, and he heard two swans conversing, two mates, a male and a female swan, and they were conversing. And he started to laugh, you know, like very, like, wow, ha, ha, ha. You know, he's very, found it very amusing. So his wife asked him, what are you laughing about? You know, and he couldn't tell her. And she knew about this too. She knew that he had this boon that he could understand the language of the birds, but if he told anybody what he, you know, heard, he would die. So she kept insisting that, you know, please tell me, like that. I want to know, what are you laughing about? So he could understand from that she was not his well-wisher. So she had him, he had her banished. You know, he sent her back to her parents' home. And their daughter, which was Kaikeyi, never saw her mother again. She had seven brothers, and she was actually brought up by her wet nurse, who was Mantara. the bad guy in the story. So she was brought up by her. And so some time passed. And, you know, when she was grown up, Maharaj Dasarath was touring or whatever. And when he came to that kingdom, he wanted to marry Kaikeyi. And he, at that point, he was already married to Kausalya and Sumitra. Neither one of them had a child. They were both childless. So he made a promise, actually, at that point, to Maharaj Ashvapati, that the son of, you know, Kaikeyi would be the next ruler, the next king of the state or the province of Kosala. So that happened, and she became his wife. And then and Mantara came with her, because, you know, that she was like her surrogate mother, and she brought her up from infancy practically, or just from young childhood after her mother was banished. But even the word Mantara, you know, means hunchback. She was crooked. She was crooked not only in physical appearance, but she was crooked in the mind. She was, you know, she's portrayed as being very ambitious, you know, very socially ambitious. And she could understand that, you know, any good things that were going to come her way were going to be only as a result of Kaikeyi's position. You know, she didn't have any position of her own. She was just a wet nurse. I mean, she wasn't even a mother. She was even a mother-in-law. She was just the nurse, you know, just like the person who brought her up, servant, basically. So she was always, you know, very careful to make sure that Kaikeyi's position was, you know, strong, so, because that meant that she'd be getting all the fringe benefits of that. So in any event, so they were there, and she influenced her on one occasion. Maharaj Dasarath had to go to battle against a demon called Sambarasura, along with Indra, actually. A little bit of interplanetary cooperation there. But so in this, and Kaikeyi convinced him, please allow me to go with you. So she went with him, and actually, as it was, she became his chariot driver. At least on this particular day, she was a chariot driver when he was injured by an arrow that was shot by Sambasara, and it penetrated his armor and remained in his chest. So she was the chariot driver, and she thought fast, and she was able to... Oh, and the wheel of his chariot broke. So somehow or another, she was able to fix the wheel of the chariot, get him off the battlefield, get the arrow out of his chest, and she nursed him back to good health again. And he was so grateful, basically, because she saved, you know, his life, and she displayed great courage in the process of doing that. So she offered her, at that time, she offered her two boons. And she said, okay, thank you very much. I won't request them now. When it's necessary, I'll request them. So that's kind of the background story leading up to this. So then what happens is time passes, and when Ram was about 16 years old, he got married to Sita. And a little after that time, or right around that time, all the wives of Maharaj Dasarath eventually did have children. Mother Kausalya was the mother of Bharat, and Sumitra was the mother of Satrughna, and of course Kaikeyi was, did I say that right? Kausalya was the mother of Ram, sorry, yeah. Kaikeyi was the mother of Bharat, and Sumitra was the mother of Satrughna. So, and Lakshman, both, okay, I didn't realize that. So anyway, so at some point, Maharaj Ashvapati fell ill, and he requested that his son, who would be Bharat, go there. And so Bharat and both Bharat and Satrughna left, and they for 12 years they were with him like that. And during that time, I guess Maharaj Dasarath kind of forgot his promise or whatever, but he made a decision that he wanted to, you know, incarnate Ram. He wanted Ram to become the next king. So that was all happening. And everybody was happy about it, including Kaikeyi, who was there. She was happy about it. Everybody was happy about it. Everybody loved Ram. You know, his brothers loved him. The other mothers loved him. He was, you know, he was popular. But what happened was this Kaikeyi, you know, from behind the scenes, she poisoned the mind of, Mantara, from behind the scenes, poisoned the mind of Kaikeyi and convinced her that this is not a good idea, you know, for you to allow this to happen. I mean, you know, actually at that time, she was kind of like the favorite queen. She was the youngest and she was getting the most attention. But Mantara was pointing out to her that if Ram becomes, you know, the king, then you're not going to be, you're not the queen mother. Kaushalya is the queen mother. And, you know, you're going to fall very much into the background there. And, you know, so in this way, she just kind of worked on her. And Kaikeyi was the victim, basically. She was became the innocent or not so innocent victim. And she, so Mantara suggested a way in which she could prevent that from happening, which was usually two boons. Asked for that. The first boon would be that Ram is, her son, Bharat, become, you know, coronated as emperor instead of Ram, and that Ram be banished to the forest for 14 years, which would give her son sufficient time to consolidate his position, so to speak, and then he could return, you know. So she did that. She asked for those boons, you know. And Maharaj Dhatarash was, like, shocked. It was a very difficult thing for him to do, you know, obviously. Firstly, he was like, you know, totally shocked that she could even, she was asking that. But, you know, he made that vow. He offered those two boons, and maybe, I don't know, I didn't get to study it carefully enough. Maybe you also remember that previous promise he made to Maharaj Ashvapati, but he had to grant her those two boons. And he had to, you know, he had to tell Ram that, please go to the forest for 14 years and like that. And it was a very difficult thing for him to do. Actually, 6 days after Ram departed to go to the forest, he passed away of broken heart because Ram was his everything. You know, Ram was his son, and he really loved him a lot. But he had to do that. So, and then, of course, it kind of backfired a little bit, you know, because she was hoping Kaikeyi was hoping to enjoy that position of, you know, the favorite queen, but now he passed, he's gone, so that, you know, and she was rejected eventually by her own son, Bharat. He refused from that. It's said that from that point onwards, Bharat never called her mother again for the rest of his life. And the other, you know, Satrughna and, like, everybody was very upset with her, and at one point they tried to attack this Mantara, but Kaikeyi, you know, talked them out of it, restrained them from doing so. But, so that's kind of how the whole thing played out. So, this is, you know, very interesting part of the Bhagavatam. Well, all the parts of the Bhagavatam are interesting. But one thing we can learn from this, you know, there's like a double example here, is the how important it is to follow Dharma. Like, obviously, this wouldn't have been, this is a very difficult decision for Maharaj Dasharath to make. What would have been pleasing to him is if he could have just somehow or another talked her out of it. But he didn't do that. He didn't even attempt to do that. He's okay, the dharmic thing to do is, I made this, you know, I got to keep my word. I got to keep my word. I promised the two boons, and now I got to do it. And he did it. And it was so difficult for him. The proof that it was difficult for him was so difficult for him that, you know, basically a week or two later, he died of broken heart because of what he had to do. See? But he did it. So, and Ram, of course, Ram is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but he's playing the role of an ordinary human being here. So he also had to do something very difficult. He was about to be coronated king, you know. I mean, he didn't protest. There's no mention of him saying, what are you talking about, Dad? You know, I mean, this is ridiculous, crazy. And she's just, no. Yes, that was the order of his father. He just accepted it, you know. Very, you know, in the proper spirit, and he went off like that. So, yeah, this is actually tapasya. This is actually tapasya. Tapasya is voluntarily accepting some inconvenience to the mind, to the body, for the purpose of making spiritual advancement. And this is, you know, an example of that right here. This is the real tapasya, not being in a ring of fire or being up to the neck in freezing cold water. This is tapasya. And this is really the this is the essence of devotional service. You know, to be able to make these tough decisions. Would have been a very difficult thing for him to do, but he did it because that's what he knew it was the right thing to do. So he did the right thing rather than what was the pleasing thing. And it's penance. It's, you know, tapasya. It's just another way of referring to the same thing. So Krishna says, it's in the second canto of the Bhagavatam, that this penance is it's the essence of devotional service. It's non-different from himself. There's one verse like that in the second canto of the Bhagavatam. And this is one of the big main lessons we learn from the Srimad Bhagavatam. Actually, we're being educated, you know, by the Bhagavatam, how to come to the platform of pure devotional service, and which is the only way that Krishna will be understood. Bhakti mama bijanati yavanyas chasmi tatvataha tato mam tatvato gyatva vishate tadanantana. That Krishna can only be understood by devotional service, and this is a really big part of it. You know, performing this tapasya, or in other words, making the decision to do the right thing rather than the pleasing thing. Okay? There's various examples that kind of, or metaphors that can, you know, describe this. Little Radhanath Maharaj is fond of, he uses that example of, there's the good dog and the bad dog. And he mentions, you know, he heard this from some other person, but the idea is that within every person there's the good dog and the bad dog. And, you know, the good dog is the one who knows to do the right thing, and the bad dog is always like mantra, you know. And they're always, there's a constant, like, fight between the two of them. And which one wins? The one you feed. The one you feed the most. The one, you know, the one that gets fed. So it's the same thing, you know, within us. We have the good dogs in there and the bad dogs in there, unless you're already, you know, 100% pure devotee. And, you know, the one that wins out is the one that gets fed. In other words, where attention goes, energy flows. So if you give attention to the bad dog, if you're listening to the bad dog, then that's going to eventually be our ruination. And if we give attention to the good dog and neglect the bad dog, then that'll eventually be what is, you know, the cause of our elevation. And so I think this is, like, you know, a valid sort of an example. Prabhupada himself, he didn't use that example, but he, right here in this, here in Los Angeles, right upstairs in that room there, there's a video where there's an excerpt where Vishnu John is asking Prabhupada a question. Vishnu John, at that time, Maharaj, but, and I have to paraphrase it. He's saying, you know, the worldly men, they're out there, they're working, their minds are having to be absorbed in so many mundane things, and how is it possible for them to be, you know, thinking of Krishna, getting absorbed in Krishna? I mean, it's like, you know, it's getting, you know, they're being, and Prabhupada says it's like a tug of war. Prabhupada's response was, he gave this, he's like a tug of war. And everybody knows that game, you know, tug of war. He says you just, you know, you have to fight it. You just have to keep trying, you know, the Maya is trying to pull you back to her side, and for our part, we have to be trying to pull to stay on, you know, go towards Krishna. And he says, but if you keep chanting Hare Krishna, then you'll win that tug of war. That was, you know, Prabhupada's point. So, and that's the challenge. That's the challenge of being a devotee. You know, it's constant. It's like this tug of war is there, and we have to fight it. I was kind of thinking about, you know, examples of practical example of how this plays out in the life of a devotee. And I was thinking, just like in the history of our movement, this is an example that hopefully probably will grab everybody's attention. We've seen vivid examples of this, that of leaders, you know, of devotees who came to positions of leadership. And when you come to a position of leadership, because, you know, a movement has to have leaders, any, like, group of people, you have to have some leaders. So somebody has to be a leader. And it's just like automatically when somebody becomes a leader, there's a certain amount of honor, there's a certain amount of prestige, there's a certain amount of power, there's a certain amount of, you know, that goes along with it, you see? And those things, if somebody is not, if you're not sufficiently advanced, sufficiently in the mode of goodness, they can have a detrimental effect, an adverse effect, rather than a beneficial effect on your spiritual life. You see? So, because, in the material world, everybody's after wealth, women, and followers. Okay? So, in devotional service, somebody becomes a leader, and those things are easily, they're at your fingertips. Wealth, the opportunity to do things so you get, get a bit more wealth, women, follow, but those things aren't going to help us progress or advance in devotional service. So, somebody, if somebody's in the mode of, so a lot of these devotees who were leaders and who are no longer leaders, they are examples of devotees who somehow or another, at least for the time being, to some greater or lesser degree, they lost that tug of war, or they're over on the other side at this point, or the bad dog has kind of got the upper hand, you see? Because that constant struggle is always going on. And in the mode of goodness, one realizes, in the mode of passion, somebody's thinking, in the mode of passion, actually, somebody desires wealth, wealth, women, followers, power, fame, prestige, like that. Somebody in the mode of goodness, the mode of goodness, when that kind of enters in there, or that becomes a little bit more predominant, you understand, wait a second, I'm not, you're offered a position, say you're in a position, you're offered a position, there's an opportunity for positional leadership, but the pitfalls. So you're thinking, I'm not qualified. I know that, if I get in that position, these pitfalls are going to be there. I don't think I can handle it. I don't think I can handle all that prestige and all that honor and that fame and glorification and adoration better. And that's good. That's good to feel like that. You see? It's good that a person, that we recognize that. Because at least if I say I'm speaking for myself, I'm giving this call. I'm not qualified. But then it has to go beyond that. As devotees, we have to even go beyond that. It's not enough to just recognize that I'm not qualified, therefore maybe I should humbly not do it. No, why? Because Lord Chaitanya says, and Prabhupada says, Yare deke tare kaha krishna upadesh amada agaya guduhana tare edesh. In other words, we're told somehow or another, we're told that you got to go beyond that. You got to go beyond that understanding that, that fear of I don't want to be in that position because I don't want to be, susceptible to becoming, falling victim, falling prey to these material desires in the form of profit, adoration, and distinction. Therefore, I'm not qualified to deal with that. I'll just stay in a humble position. We got to go beyond that. We got to be thinking, no, it's true. I don't want to fall victim to those things. But at the same time, I have to take the risk. Why? Because the order is there. The order is there from Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The order is there from all the predecessor acharyas to become a leader. Lord Chaitanya is saying, wherever you go, whoever you meet, tell them about Krishna. In this way, become guru. Become guru and deliver everybody in this land. You see? So beyond the mode of passion, beyond the mode of goodness even, is pure goodness. And in pure goodness, the person's thinking, the devotee is thinking, and this is really where we all have to go sooner or later, right? Okay? The devotee's thinking, I'm not qualified to do this. I'm not qualified to step up to the plate, to do that type of service. But the order is there. The order is there from the spiritual master. The order there is from the... So I have to try to do it, and simultaneously I have to try to do it. I have to try to avoid becoming victim, to these forces which can, destroy, throw me off devotional service. And when those things come, I have to understand that it's all, it's Krishna. It's, if any prophet, adoration, honor is coming my way, it's all by Krishna's mercy. I'm not doing anything. No, one has to, go beyond that. One has to take the risk of, being criticized, of not being proud, who does this person think he is, he's accepting such high position, and You have to do it for the pleasure of Guru and Gauranga, like that, even at the risk of, you know, falling down, even at the risk of being criticized. And actually, some, these devotees who were early leaders in our movement, I see them in that light. I don't see them as like evil people who were, you know, materially motivated right from the get-go, and they, these guys didn't have a good bone in their body. No, I see them as great souls, and you know, the Prabhupada gave them that opportunity. They tried to do what they could. Some have been successful and have, you know, gloriously continued this. Others have kind of had, you know, some stumbling a little bit. But I don't know, there's this expression, better to have loved than lost than never to have loved at all. Or another English expression is nothing ventured, nothing gained. The first one was a Shakespeare one. Nothing better to have loved than lost than never to have loved. In other words, they made it. They did what Prabhupada wanted. Prabhupada wanted leaders, and they took up the, you know, they took it up, and they tried to be leaders to the best of their ability. And so that's glorious. That's glorious. And even they, you know, fell prey to some of these things like of profit, adoration, distinction, material desires. At least they made that attempt. And there's one nice sentence here in the Bhagavad Gita I'll read, and I think I'll end the class on that note. Prabhupada's chapter 6, text 3, in the purport, Prabhupada says, the process of linking oneself with the Supreme is called yoga. It may be compared to a ladder for attaining the topmost spiritual realization. Okay, so that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to attain the topmost spiritual realization. Okay? It says here, this ladder begins from the lowest material condition of the living entity and rises up to perfect self-realization and pure spiritual life. So, this is a ladder. You know, we're being offered to, come on, get on the ladder. And it's not easy to go from the lowest material condition of the living entity to perfect self-realization just like that. So somebody might, you know, have to stop on the ladder for a bit or fall off the ladder and get back on the ladder. But the idea is that, you know, it's a progressive thing. And there is, it's possibly a multiple life program. This becoming a pure devotee, coming to the what Prabhupada says is a perfect self-realization and pure spiritual life, very possibly a multiple life program. It seems like that's the case. So all these devotees, and ourselves included, we've made a start. You know, we could look at it like that. Some are maybe way, you know, higher on the ladder than others, and some are maybe going to finish up in this lifetime, and others of us will, you know, finish up what we didn't do in this lifetime and in next lifetime or future lifetime like that. But it's, you know, it's definitely what we have to do. It's what we have to, this is what we, the issue we have to address, you know, coming to this perfect self-realization and pure spiritual life, pure devotional service. And you know, we're going to try to do it in this life, and if we can, wonderful, and if we can't, we're going to make some progress, and whatever progress we make, that's our, in our spiritual bank account, and then we will have that as backing us, that strength backing us when we start up again in our next lifetime to finish up what we didn't finish with, you know, what we didn't finish in this lifetime. So I'll stop there. Anybody have any question? Yeah. Dr. Roger.
I remember you said that in the Bhagavatam, the story was short, and it was summarized. Is there...
I'm a little hard of hearing. You could just speak.
I remember in the Bhagavatam, you said the story was short and it was summarized. What book would you... for the full thing, for the full story?
I missed it. It's not true. It's
one of the whole story.
Yeah, it's a very... what we were reading there was almost like an invocation. It was kind of like the first few verses of the chapter. And you noticed he was like at the end, he was saying, may that Lord Ramachandra protect us. So he was just kind of like very, you know, very summary kind of a way, going over some of Lord Ramachandra's pastimes. It wasn't really even an attempt to, you know, to give the whole story like that. And also elsewhere, aside from that, the Sukadeva Goswami mentions, he says this, let me just see if I can find it very quickly. Because this is Sukadeva Goswami saying, speaking to Maharaj Prakriti, says, because you have heard again and again about Lord Ramachandra, the husband and mother Sita, I shall describe these activities only in brief. Please listen. So, you know, this is not an attempt at this particular part of the Bhagavatam to, you know, describe the whole thing. He's for those two reasons. One is just the beginning of the chapter. He's just offering some prayers. And also he knows that Maharaj Prakriti is well aware of the pastimes of Lord Ramachandra. So, like that. But the Ramayana is actually the Vedic literature which gives the comprehensive description of the pastimes of Lord Ramachandra. And there are different editions of that are, you know, devotees can read. Ramayana is the name of the literature. Yamala Bhakti Prabhu.
Excuse me. First, thank you very much for a nice overview of the Ramayana, at least the early parts of it. Very instructive, and some of the insights that you gave further were enlightening, how it can apply to us, how we can utilize it. There was just one point I wanted to add, because it went by rather quickly, and that had to do with King Dasharatha dying. It wasn't only that he died of a broken heart, which is true. But there is a whole story behind that. And the story behind it is very fascinating. And it also is highly instructive for us. The story behind it was that when the King Dasharatha was quite younger, and he went out hunting one night, and he wanted to test to see if he could shoot an animal by sound. He had that power. But like any archer, you have to keep up your practice in order to be able to accomplish a particular result like that. So one night he went out and he heard the slurping of water in the distance, and he assumed that it was an elephant drinking water, and he would simply shoot at the elephant and kill it, as we know that Kshatriyas were allowed a certain amount of latitude with respect to killing as opposed to other persons in other castes. So when he shot the arrow, the first thing he heard was, "Oh, oh," a human voice. He said, "What was that?" So he went and he examined what he had done. And he saw it wasn't an elephant at all. It was a sadhu, a young man. And he looked at him, and he had shot him right in an area where he had to die. I think it was right near the heart. So the boy was not very concerned. He was a sadhu. He was not that concerned about his own life, but he was very concerned about his parents, who were both blind. And they were living in a little kutir right nearby. And he said, "I'm not really concerned, as I just said, about myself, but my poor blind parents, how will they go on without my assistance, without my help?" So Dasharatha was feeling very ashamed and very downhearted. He said, "Would you please go to my parents and tell them that I'm dying, or in a few minutes I will be dead, so that they know what the situation is?" So Dasharatha, he agreed, of course, and he went back there and he saw the two blind parents, and he told them that a very serious accident has occurred, and "Let me please bring you to your son, who is dying or is now dead." So they were immediately overwhelmed. They loved him very, very much. They were attached to him and dependent upon him. So they went to the son and they saw what had happened. And Dasharatha then explained to him exactly what had happened. And there was an element of irresponsibility in that. Hearing the slurping of water does not automatically mean that it is an elephant, or it is a bear, or it is a monkey, or anything. You have to actually get close, especially since it was nighttime. You have to get close and be absolutely certain. Otherwise, it would be, in this case, as it was, an irresponsible killing. So that's what happens. So he explained what he had done, that he had not taken the trouble and the time to see that it was an elephant. And the father, who was overwhelmed, he said, had you not told me this, I would have cursed you as you can never even imagine. Remember, these two, husband and wife, are very advanced yogis who are blind, living in that little ashram there. He said, however, I will minimize the curse that I will give you. One day in the future, you will be bereft of your son as I am bereft of my son here. And as a result, you will die as I am going to die very shortly, since I cannot live without my son, and my wife will also die. And that's exactly what happened. And Dasarath told this story to Kausalya, who was the oldest of the queens, just before he died, and then he died, fell down on her shoulder. And that was the end of the situation. What it shows us is that every action we perform has a result. And we need to be very careful before we commit the action, especially if it's going to be possibly be dangerous. We need to think before we act. Sometimes you can't help. You're put in a position where you have to act very quickly. But in this case, he could have very well given some thought to the situation and acted accordingly, and that never, of course, would have happened. He would not have been cursed in that manner. So that's the lesson that we have to learn. On the other hand, King Dasarath was very, very happy in one sense. Happy in the sense that that he would die out of separation from his son. In other words, with complete absorption in Lord Ramachandra. And he would ultimately go back home, back to Godhead, if not immediately, certainly later on.
Thank you. That was a great addition. Thank you very much. Okay, we stop there. Gancho Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. What I said, I didn't spend as much. What I